Idiots in Canada took this serious.
Guess who's back? Wait for it.
So I think Canada is going to be a very serious contender to be our 51st state.
From having worked with President Trump, I can tell you that we have to take seriously what he says and make sure we're responding appropriately.
If you polled Canadians right now, 11 out of 10 would want to swap their Trudeau pesos for the American dollar.
Organizers with Canada's Armed Forces say the military will meet its recruitment goal this year, and while the reasons are unclear, there's been an uptick in interest since Donald Trump became U.S. president.
Can you actually annex another country in 2025?
So what would it look like? Do we see tanks roll in from the borders? Is this coming from the air? Are they bringing down our telecom and transportation systems?
Has everybody lost their minds? Are we really doing this? Are we buying guns and deploying troops and making plans for U.S. invasion? Are some of us preemptively surrendering, trying to be the first to bend a knee and curry favor with our inevitable orange overlord? What happened to our steely northern resolve? Aren't we supposed to be the people who breathe in the cold, clean air and calmly assess the situation from a distance? We survey the histrionics of our very dramatic American neighbors, and then we make measured, sober, judicious decisions. Maybe right now we need a bit of that kind of dad-like, prairie common sense. Maybe what we need is a bit of Preston Manning. Yes, you know the name. Or did you forget about Press? He may come across as a prairie land Mr. Rogers, a local pastor who happened to be in Parliament, but the truth is, if you want to understand what populism is in Canada, Manning is your man. Populism is not a dirty word to him. I mean, why would it be? What he did to the progressive conservatives back in the late 80s and early 90s is kind of like what Maxime Bernier is trying to do now. He formed this little fringe party to the right of the mainstream Canadian conservatives. And just like the People's Party of Canada, these guys were mocked as a bunch of rednecks and hicks. Even mainstream conservatives used to laugh at Preston Manning and his party, but he got the last laugh because in 1993, the progressive conservatives who had been running Canada went down to just 2 seats in Parliament. I mean, this was not just the worst defeat at the federal level of any party in Canadian political history. This was the worst defeat ever suffered by a governing party in the Western world. And what did Preston Manning do? He harnessed the white-hot rage of Western alienation, the sheer populist enmity that was widely felt, not just towards the left or to the Liberal Party, but to the establishment, the Laurentian elite, all of the fancy people out east writ large. He took that anger, he threw a saddle on it, and he rode it from one seat to 52. And his fans would say that he took something that had a lot of destructive power, that populist energy, and he molded it into a legitimate political force that could represent his people's interests within our system of governance. His fans would say that Preston Manning stopped Canada from being torn apart. So maybe this is a guy who knows something that can help us right now. And he agreed to talk to me during his vacation in Hawaii, where he is now a professional competitive surfer. Only half of that last sentence is false. Wait for it. Hello, Mr. Manning.
Hello.
You've said that Canada's response to Trump needs common sense, not mindless hysterics. Are you sure?
Yeah.
Have you given proper consideration to mindless hysterics?
Yeah. Well, I'd back up, Jesse, and I don't know why we conceptualize politics in terms of the seating arrangements in after the French Revolution, but that's what we've been doing. The current division, the political arena, is no longer so much between left, right, and center. It's between parties dominated by aristocratic elites, media elites, political elites, academic elites, and political parties dominated and driven by bottom-up political energy and people that have a fundamentally indifferent agenda than the elites. The dominance of these bottom-up populist movements is going to continue, and that's going to have an effect on the Canadian election, too. And the reaction to this, the reaction by the elites is basically hysteria, that this man's a madman, that these rank-and-file people haven't the faintest idea what's best for them. They have to be told what's best for them.
You know, you don't sound that different from like a campus Marxist. Power to the people, and this is, it's not about left to right. You've got your aristocrats, and then you got the rank and file, and no war but class war.
But the fundamental difference is that with the Marxists, you exploit the bottom-up political energy to create what? A dictatorship.
Isn't a dictatorship exactly what Americans are fearing right now with Trump?
Jefferson, you know, he was one of the framers of the American Constitution, and somebody wrote him a letter, I think it was in the last year of his life, and asked, if you were redoing the American Constitution, would you give as much power and influence to rank-and-file people as you've done by allowing them to elect the Congress, around to elect the president, and so forth? These rank-and-file people, they don't know enough. They're not well enough educated. They don't understand economics. They don't understand politics. They'll run after some idiot. They'll run after some dictator. Jefferson anticipated that question, because in his day, Andrew Jackson was on the scene, who was the Trump of his day. And so he said, okay, and if you think them, the rank-and-file people, not fit to exercise self-government, you think they'll run after a dictator, you think they'll run after a nutcase, if you think that, the remedy is not to take self-government from them, but to inform their discretion. And so I say to people, if you're afraid of these bottom-up populist movements, and they have a potential for going off the rails, they have a potential for eccentricity, if you're worried about that, then get involved with them and inform their discretion, form them a better way. Use your expertise, but put it in their hands, not using it for yourself. So I think that's the answer to your question. If you think there's a worry of American populism producing some dictator, the thing for Americans with that concern is to not just attack the populist movement, but to get involved with it and make sure it goes in the right direction. And I know I'm sounding like a homer here. There is no part of North America that has had more experience with populist movements, populist parties, and populist parties that became government than Western Canada.
Listen, I'm inclined to agree. This trend by which populism has become a dirty word, it's like a fear of the people. And really, it's a complaint about propriety in many cases, transgressions upon propriety. Years ago, you wrote a book that people should stop complaining and get involved if they want to see things become less toxic in our discourse. We're a little bit past that, though. So this populism has found its expression around the world in various leaders, and in the United States with Donald Trump. People have been getting involved. And sometimes the way that they get involved is not so great. You know, it all sounds great. Everybody should go get involved in civics, go get involved with politics. We saw on January 6th in America how some people choose to get involved. And now we have this president, again, who, I guess he was joking, but he has this way of taking jokes about the 51st state, and then it's his favorite joke. He likes that joke a lot.
Canada should have treated it as a joke. Canada should have treated it as a joke. Said, yeah, this guy's always making off-the-cuff joke. Ha-ha, that's funny. Let's move on to something substantive. But what did Canadians' elites do, particularly the media and the government? They took this as serious as Dickens, that, like, it's nonsense. You even if you were going to take over Canada, how are you going to do it? You need an act of Congress. How would he get that through the Congress? How would he get that through his base? His base, he's got a populist base. One of the worries that a populist leader's got to keep an eye on is don't stray off the agenda that got you elected, because that base can move away from you. And his base can say, you never said anything to us about Canada as a 51st. And so one of the constraints on Trump is not what Canadians do. Like, you were elected to get us more affordable cost of living, and let's get back to that.
Do you still think that he was just joking? I mean, a lot of people who work for the public service in America who voted for him have now lost their jobs. He's doing all sorts of things, extending presidential power through executive order that no one necessarily voted for, that was not a part of his platform.
No, well, I think he was joking to start with, but then when he saw this reaction,
yeah,
these idiots in Canada took this serious. This can be a lever to get them to do all sorts of things. I can use it as a lever to get them to clean up their borders. I can get it as a lever to get them to take their Arctic sovereignty seriously. I can get it as a lever to get them to get pipelines going east and west. I think it started as a joke. And then when he saw it being taken so seriously by Canadians, it turned into something more than a joke.
I think that might be exactly right. You've said, why in the hell would Trump want Canada anyhow? That's bad for our self-image. Why wouldn't he want us? We're pretty good.
Why would he want to inherit the political problems? Like, okay, suppose Canada became the 51st state. Immediately you would have three secession movements, one in Quebec, one in Alberta, and maybe one in Newfoundland and Labrador. Wouldn't that be nice if you're the president of now the North America? And the first thing that happens is three big chunks of it want to get out and have got all kinds of resources to help get out. Like, it's ridiculous to think about it, and it's ridiculous to think about it from his angle.
You suggested a different path here, which is that we should be, first of all, placate these, I think, red herrings about fentanyl and border. And okay, fine, we've done that. But what you've suggested is that we kind of sell him on the idea of a North America-wide energy self-sufficiency. I got to ask you, Mr. Manning, what about Donald Trump makes you think that he's into the idea of us?
No, he's not into the middle of us. But one of the things, and he actually said this in his inaugural address, this isn't just the platform, this is his first statements as president. He wants energy self-sufficient. Now, he's talking about America.
Yeah.
But you can't get energy self-sufficiency for America without Canadian exports. Exports of electricity, particularly from Quebec and Ontario and BC, and particularly exports of petroleum from Alberta. North America cannot become self-sufficient. America cannot become self-sufficient in oil without the Athabasca oil sand. And the other interesting thing about Trump, every second paragraph he talked about, let's make a deal. You know, they ask about Gaza. Well, yeah, we'll make a deal. Ask about the Ukraine. Well, we'll make a deal. He's a deal maker. And he ought to be approached by Canadians. I think what ought to be up in front is say, look, you want energy self-sufficiency. We want it too. That's in North America's best interest. Let's get that done. The last people that should be going to Washington are Justin Trudeau, Chrystia Freeland. He despises people like that. The people that should be going to Washington are people that can represent the natural resources and particularly represent the energy sector. And there are guys in the Western Canadian oil patch who dealt with people like Trump for years. He's not that much different from the Texas oil crowd. Let's make a deal. Guys that will put up a position initially to see what you're going to do. It's not really their position. They just want to see what you're going to do. I think those are the types of people that should be dealing with the Trump people. The last people on earth that should be dealing with him is the remnants of the Trudeau administration.
All right. Mr. Manning, 3 minutes to say whatever you want to trash the Trudeau crowd. Go.
Well, I look at their record. This last budget, you know, another $60 billion in debt, like from the fiscal side, just a complete disaster. The other part of the record is that, and I ask this to public audiences, I say, on what front is Canada a world player? On what economic front is Canada actually stronger than the United States? We don't have the biggest population. We don't have the biggest financial sector. We certainly don't have the smartest government. What on what front are we stronger? We are strong because we are happen to be the second largest country in the world in terms of land mass, which means we have the largest or the second largest stock of natural resources. That is the fundamental building blocks of the Canadian economy, and it is where we are strong, actually stronger potentially than the United States. And so when you talk about it, we're trying to develop the Canadian economy, trying to get it going again because it's declined under the Liberals, trying to get it stronger in relation to the United States, you have to major on the resource sectors, energy, agriculture, forestry, mining, and the fishery. And what has the Trudeau administration done with them? They treat them like relics from the past, and they even treat them as environmental liabilities. The element that ought to be our greatest strength in recovering our own economy and in dealing with Donald Trump, putting it in the back of the store. So I think those are elements that the Trudeau government has to be held accountable for. And I think when they are held accountable for them, the conclusion people would come to is that we've got to change the government. We have to get a new and better government to deal with the future.
So talk about the environment for a second, because you differ from a lot of other conservatives in that you recognize the existence of science and that we actually do have to take this seriously. Some people would say that we should not take another drop of bitumen out of the earth if we actually gave a damn about what's happening to this planet.
That's a completely unrealistic position. So where do you want those barrels to come from? You want them to come from Venezuela with its brilliant record of human rights and environmental protection? You want it to come from Nigeria? You want it to come from Saudi Arabia? Or do you want it to come from a jurisdiction where that barrel of oil, whatever you think about it, has been produced as environmentally responsibly and as socially responsibly as you can? We're providing, building on natural resources, and we ought to make sure that whatever we do in those areas is environmentally responsible and as socially responsible as possible. But that's where I'd position the position with respect to the oil sands. The other thing, and you get in discussions with people and talk about building our economy on the resource sectors, what's the biggest natural resource? You ask this to a public audience. What's the biggest natural resource? It isn't oil or lumber. It's the environment itself.
Uh-huh.
The environment itself is a natural resource.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, it has to be conserved and preserved as best as you can. But I think the Trudeau record in this whole area of natural resources is just abysmal. And what's so tragic about it, it ought to be our greatest strength, and it ought to be up front in dealing with a guy like Trump.
Okay, after the break, what does Preston Manning remember about Pierre Poilievre as a teenager? So let's talk about Pierre Poilievre. It's a strange situation because he's been in politics all of his life and he was part of Harper's crew, but he certainly was not the establishment favorite of the conservative elite. And he upset that hierarchy and became the leader by embracing populism.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's quite capable of connecting to that element. And his roots go back deeper than with Stephen Harper. He was on my Reform constituency board in Calgary Southwest when he was a teenager.
What did you make of him?
Well, I can't remember very much. This is a long time back. It struck me remarkable that here's a very young guy, is still in high school, that wanted to get involved in that way. And since then, the thing that's impressed me about him is his capacity to grow. He expanded in his capabilities when he was part of the Harper government. He's expanded in his communication capabilities. He's expanded in his capacity to analyze public policy. So I think he's got the capacity to expand to the role of being a prime minister.
It's a very generous way of putting it. Other people would say he's a very opportunistic guy who could be a very vicious attack dog when he needs to be. At other times he can, be a crypto bro. And other times he could be with the truckers. And other times he could switch around, take the glasses off, and try to be Captain Canada after telling us that Canada's broken a thousand times.
But look at most of those items you've mentioned have got a populist grassroots connection. And that's the constant through most of that. And that's what I think is going to do him very well in this next election. But Canadians have got to decide. It's more than Pauly Evra versus Carney. Are Canadians going to let public policy in this country, are they going to let the selection of the next prime minister occur as a reaction to the positions of some American president?
Yes.
We do nothing to do about the borders until an American president tells us we have to. We don't get concerned about the Arctic. Our government at least doesn't until an American president. Now the media are going to say we're going to elect the best guy to fight Trump. No, that's not what the election should be about. It should be about what's best for Canada, regardless of what Trump does or says. And Canadians are going to have to decide, is this an election to be determined in reaction to Trump, or is it going to be determined on figuring out what's best for us, regardless of Trump?
I mean, the very fact that Pierre Poilievre is the leader of the Conservatives is because he embraced a manifestation of Trumpism in Canada.
No, but even listen, Jesse, to what you're saying. When he embraces that, you say it's Trump-like. What if it was Canadian-like? What if it was like how he was before Trump? Like the very idea that when someone takes those positions, this is a reaction to Trump or an imitation of Trump. How could that be when he had these characteristics before Trump was even on the scene? And I think this is where Canadians are selling ourselves short. And it's ironic. Like, what was Carney 2 months ago described as a progressive, mm-hmm. as a progressive. What we need is a progressive. And now, what are we looking for? We want who's the best reactionary. Who's the best reaction to Trump?
Right. Who's the best response?
People that had climate change at the top of the agenda now say, no, that's not the top of our agenda. People who were against East-West Pipeline say, no, that is actually a good idea. A 180-degree change from being a progressive to a reactionary. And I don't think that ought to guide our choices in the next federal election.
Okay, I hear you. We're being too reactionary and we're being too hysterical. We're being too quick to denounce these people. We've been too quick to fear them and sneer at them, this bottom-up swell of energy that we saw with the truckers in Ottawa. I hear you make these points, and perhaps they have merit. But, Mr. Manning, I got to push you on what I think is a bit of a double standard here. Because there's another popular movement that we've seen. You might even call it a populist movement. And you have denounced it. I've heard you say we got to get rid of these people who are trashing Canada on campuses and whatnot. You've said they're bad for Canada. They're bad for our self-confidence. You've said that we've all got to stand up to them. I think that you might be denouncing like one kind of Canada trashing and not another, because when you've got the truckers occupying downtown Ottawa and honking their horns and really debasing the level of discourse, you know, I've also heard you decrying the toxicity of politics. And did that not reach its apex moment with that movement, with the F Trudeau signs and Hang Trudeau signs?
Well, I disagree with you, Jesse. That's the perspective of the Central Canadian media. That's not my perspective at all. I think those truckers represented a genuine bottom-up protest against how the COVID thing was handled. And the stupidest mistake, this is another mistake, all the Trudeau Liberals had to do, all the Justice Minister had to do, all the Prime Minister had to do was go out and talk to them.
I don't disagree.
It wouldn't have solved the problem. They wanted to be heard by somebody at the top, and they didn't know any other way of getting a voice. I think that's yet another illustration of the inadequacy of the Trudeau administration. Can't relate to the grassroots.
I think both things are totally true. I think the way in which the federal government responded to the pandemic affected Canadians differently. It was legitimately a people-powered movement, even though people wanted to cast it as somehow foreign-funded, foreign-influenced. No, these were Canadians who wanted to be heard. And they were toxic and vicious, and they were acting unlawfully, and they were taking the discourse to a nasty place, and a lot of things that you've decried. And Poilievre embraced them.
Yes, some of them were. Some of them were, right. Not the core of the movement. And this, again, if you study populist movements, this is where other people who got a more sane approach to what are conscious of the extreme lengths to which some of these movements can go, that's where getting involved with them and saying that's not a smart thing to do. The history of Western Canadian populist movements is actually the base of the populist movement often can constrain the fringe elements and the extreme elements.
Maybe. You're so generous, though, and, you know, perhaps lacking generosity to the liberals and incredibly open to Pierre Poilievre, somehow being able to navigate this and not being beholden to these people, to the crowd.
Well, and during the reform days, it was a bottom-up populist thing. In the third party tradition of the West, from the old Progressive Party, the old Farmers' Parties, the Depression Parties, the CCF, which became the NDP, social credit and reform was all part of that tradition. And the only way we had to communicate was basically public meetings. And we always had question periods at the end. And then often in those open question periods, somebody would raise some completely extreme position or some eccentric position,
yeah,
which would be the only part of the meeting that the CBC would report, incidentally, not the main speech, but the kook that talked in the question. But you know how we used to handle that? I used to say, obviously, this gentleman is very angry or this gentleman's concerned about this, but surely what he has just said does not represent the thinking of the majority of you here. And I couldn't even get that out before the rest of the crowd would start.
Right.
And this is using the common sense of the big majority to constrain the fringe elements and the eccentric elements that surface when you allow this greater freedom of public expression.
It's a nice thing you're describing, is that the people do need to have the capacity to be heard, but it's an unwieldy power and it needs to be informed by expertise. And then it gets into the halls of power where dignity and decorum need to sort of find some sort of a marriage and a balance. Yeah. I think that Pierre Poilievre's critics would say it's not that he's expanded and expanded, it's that he will do whatever is politically expedient for his own self-interest and political interests.
Well, if your aim is to become the government of Canada, what are you supposed to do? Do you think the Carney campaign is going to do anything but try to get over 6.5 million votes, and they'll do everything in its power to do it?
Okay, after the break, we will find out who Preston Manning's favorite lefty is. You don't have a lot of nice things to say about liberals. If you had to choose your favorite, liberal, NDP, any of the opposition parties, who would it be?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. I think you can learn from each of them. And I'm influenced by my father's opinion on, see, he was premier from a long time. His opinion with respect to prime ministers was that, although he disagreed with them on a lot of policy matters, was that Mackenzie King's war cabinet was the strongest cabinet he ever dealt with. And he used to make the point that when a country gets into enough trouble, you can go out and get people to run for public office that never would consider it. Now, on opposition leaders, like I think John Diefenbaker was one of the most effective, but there was a defect with that. Diefenbaker was a criminal lawyer who was used to arguing one side of the argument. And he was very good at arguing one side of the argument. He could read a jury, and he didn't have to make the decision. He didn't have to listen to the other side. He didn't have to make, he wasn't the judge. And when Diefenbaker became prime minister, he was not good at making the decision. And so while I admire Diefenbaker in terms of being a kind of attack dog, effective in opposition, I have that caveat that in his case, the guy that was effective in opposition was not necessarily equipped to be the prime minister.
What about these days? If you had to choose a liberal prime minister, if you knew the liberals were going to win, but you got to choose who would it be?
I couldn't make the choice. I honestly think that if the liberal government is returned, Canada's going to face a huge national unity problem, not just Quebec. There's a big part of this country that will simply not be prepared to live under a liberal administration. And that's a big, big worry, which I hope we don't have to face.
I think what you're suggesting is that Western alienation is back in a big way. Do you think we've been ignoring the problem?
Central Canadian media and the politicians refused to acknowledge that this alienation was there and it was getting bigger and bigger and needed to be addressed. You've got this growing potential for Western alienation, particularly if the liberals were returned, but there's no relief valve. Like what reform was? We use the oil patch analogy. Populism's like a wildcat well. You do drill out in the boondocks, and lo and behold, you hit a pocket of oil and gas, enormous amount of energy. Sometimes it turns into a rogue well. It blows the drilling platform off the wellhead. It can catch fire. It can be a lot of energy there, but it's dangerous. How do you control? How do you deal with that? Because Western alienation's like that. One way of dealing with it is you drill in a relief well from the side. It's got to be at the right angle. It's got to connect to whatever is alienating people, but not in such a way that it turns into a rogue well. And that's what reform was back in the late 1980s and early 1990s. Today, there's going to be as much Western alienation or more, particularly if it looks like the liberals were going to be returned. And that is a problem that the next prime minister is going to have to deal with.
What would that look like? What would a pressure release for the most toxic elements of populism? What would that look like in a modern context?
The model that we used was the Reform Party itself. It was a relief well. It had to identify with that, whatever was making people mad. It couldn't be at a distance. But it said, we know you're mad. There's some things we can do to fix this. We can get the Senate elected instead of appointed. We can get the budget balanced. We can give a higher priority to particularly to oil and gas. There were things we can do. I'm afraid this time that there's no relief well, you know. And just hope that occasion doesn't occur.
I guess I'll ask you this as a final question. The hopefulness that you describe is one that some kind of sanity will prevail, and there is a system that's designed to check power, and that some sort of rules-based system is going to be preserved here. The counter argument to that is that we have a true despot here who is blitzkrieging in his first 100 days and trying to upset those norms and seize power in a way that is completely irrespective of rules-based order. And he might be telling the truth that he wants to expand territorially. He might be telling the truth that he's interested in all of our natural resources and annexing us. I guess my question to you is, recognizing how hopeful you are, how worried are you?
There are constraints on the presidency of the United States that Canadians know nothing about. And Trump knows nothing about Canada. How are you going to actually annex it? Exactly how are you going to do that? You're not going to march the American military in. You try that and the Congress will have something to say about it and the courts. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? Do you know what you're getting a hold of? Do you know what you're getting a hold of when you get Quebec? And you think you're not dependent on Quebec, on Canadian natural resources? Quebec supplies a lot of electricity to New York City. If Canada wanted to play hardball, when they go into this negotiation with the U.S. on you're going to need our energy, maybe they should blink the lights in New York for an hour or so, just to show you are dependent on us. Like
Preston Manning, you're threatening him with the Quebecois. You're threatening him with separatists. Do you know what you're getting here? Have you met these guys?
You know what you're getting here. But
all right.
you raise good questions, and they will become part of the debate in the days ahead. But I do think that this bottom up populism is one of the waves of the future, and how to manage it, how to ensure that it's responsible and accomplishes things for rank and file people is a big challenge. And I just happen to think that Pierre-Paul Evers got a lot better grasp of how to do that than Mark Carney.
Mr. Manning, I had a really good time talking to you. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Jesse.
That is your Canada Land. I hope you enjoyed it. Email me about it. I'm at jesse@canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Audio production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Today's episode was fact-checked by Sam Connert. Max Collins is our director of audio. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. I'm Jesse Brown, and today we are talking about the news. We'll talk about Pedro Poilievre and his advice for Canadians who enjoy thick rails of Colombian yayo.
So next time you're snorting up, just make sure you use a paper straw to save the world.
Wait for that. Welcome back to the show, Danny Paradis. Independent freelance journalist and associate professor of journalism and one-time Canada Land editor and all-around terrific reporter at large. Danny Paradis, welcome back.
Thank you, Jesse. Nice to see you.
Danny, where's Pierre? He's been missing in action as the media's attention has turned towards Carney and the Conservatives' lead has slipped. Listen to these headlines. The Walrus. Pierre Poilievre's lead was supposed to be unshakable. It isn't. New York Times, Trump's threats against Canada upend conservative playbook. CBC, how Trump is forcing the conservatives to pivot. Hamilton Spectator, Pierre Poilievre seems to be floundering as the world changes around him. Kirk Lapointe in Business in Vancouver, sorry, Pierre, Carney is our next prime minister. Trump 2.0 derails Pierre Poilievre's glide path in Canada, says Politico. Toronto Star, the country wanted change. Pierre Poilievre seemed like the answer. Then along came Donald Trump. And throughout all of this negative press, that Pierre was slipping. He was fading away. Where was Pierre? He was rebranding. Danny, Pierre is back.
Are there any patriots in the room who are ready to put Canada first?
The Conservative Party says close to 2,000 turned out in Ottawa for what it billed as a Canada First rally on Flag Day.
Poilievre is hoping to seize on the tidal wave of patriotism generated by U.S. President Donald Trump's threats.
After repeatedly calling Canada broken over the past 2 years, Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre today took a more upbeat tone.
Shifting over to patriotism as a key theme, that's a winner. Look at the size of that flag.
Sometimes it does take a threat to remind us what we have, what we could lose, and what we could become.
Danny, what do you make of Pierre 2.0, or is it 3.0?
I think it's 3.0, because 2.0 is when he lost the glasses.
Yeah.
So this is...
He lost the glasses and he got a little bit buff. So are the glasses back on? What do you make of, because he's back, baby. What do you make of Pierre these days?
So what are we talking about? I feel like we have to establish that. So this Saturday, which was Flag Day in Canada, he reemerged, got back off the mat from what has to be an incredible transition. Like, he had it in the bag. The carbon tax was a perfect reflection of the Canadian mood. And then all of a sudden, Donald Trump, tariffs, whatever else Donald Trump is doing, like tweets from the toilet, has just turned his life upside down. But he came back. Started with a quote by John A. Macdonald.
In the words of our great first prime minister, conservatives will fight, and I quote, to give us a great, a united, a rich, an improving, a developing Canada, instead of making us a tributary to American laws, American railways, American bondage, and American tolls.
You and I have actually talked about quite a bit, Sir John A. Macdonald. I'm not a fan. Are you a fan?
Am I a fan of? No, I think that even as the winds of change tilt back towards our founding fathers, am I a fan of John A. Macdonald, who starved Indigenous people on the plains without even getting high-handed about it? No, I'm not a fan of John. No, I'm not a fan of John A. Macdonald.
Well, Poilievre's argument is that, you know, if Canada isn't your friend,
who is?
So the reaction is, instead of, oh, you know, Canada is complex in the same way that the U.S. is complex, and in the U.S. you actually see a rewriting of history, you know, it's like not quite illegal to be black yet, but who knows, like the existence of being a non-white person is now a DEI hire. And in Canada, the push in this message seemed to be, let's stop talking about Canada being bad. Let's all just get back together and rally under the flag.
The need to celebrate rather than cancel our proud history and country.
Danny, I think you're missing the point here. I think you're missing, like, what Polyev is actually communicating in this rebrand, because old Pierre, everything was blue, but now it's all red.
And white.
The old Pierre would just go on and on and on about the carbon tax, axe the tax, the carbon tax. My 13-year-old knew that line, axe the tax. It was very effective. Not anymore. The new Pierre, Pierre 3.0, says, I have to concede. I've had to reflect on whether it is a top-of-mind issue, and after much reflection, I have concluded that the carbon tax will be an even bigger issue in the coming election.
I'm sorry, I fell asleep for a little bit there. Are we done?
No, we're not done. The new Pierre said that he's really concerned that the Liberals ban you from using a plastic straw but allow you to use cocaine.
So next time you're snorting up, just make sure you use a paper straw to save the world.
Now, given the price of cocaine these days and the absorbency issues with paper straws, I don't think he knows what he's talking about there.
I mean, I sort of like that one. That one's pretty good.
He's going to make it a crime. It's going to be in the criminal code if you with monuments to John A. McDonald.
We will add new criminal code penalties for anyone caught tearing down or defacing our statues and monuments.
I don't know.
He loves John A. McDonald.
He
so
really
much.
Does. But this is what he says. And I think he's speaking to you here, Danny. People who've tried to destroy the great founder of this country, John A. McDonald. I think he had you in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've got a message for them. If there were no John A. McDonald, there would be no Canada.
And we're like, oh, that's fine.
Well, not now. Not now that we're patriotic. Now we like Canada again. Here's what he's got to figure out is having ascended not only to leadership of the Conservative Party, but to a, at one time, what was it, 28-point lead in the, like, just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Having ascended by jumping on the Trump train, I mean, like, we should never forget that he was the one conservative who dared to make common cause and embrace the trucker occupation of Ottawa.
He brought them Timbits.
And days later, he was the leader of the Conservative Party. He owes his position, he owes his job to his affiliation with, to whatever degree we can call that a Canadian manifestation of Trumpism. That's what got him here. And now the mood has turned decidedly anti-Trump. And ironically, because the patriotism that he has been long, you know, it's a time for a return to nationalism and patriotism. Well, Canadians found that patriotism in our united disgust and anger at Trump and his assault on our sovereignty. So where does that leave Pierre?
The rally, the visuals, the red and the white, like, it almost looks like a Liberal rally. So what do you do in that situation when you have to reverse your opinions, your polarity, while also still saying, you'll note, he mentions, well, we should maybe trade more with the U.S.
Option two, we trade even more. And both our workers make more. Our consumers pay less.
And does that really make sense when we're looking at tariffs that is like 25% and then an extra 50% sort of tariff on tariff stacking? And like, okay, at like 75% tariffs, we should have more trade with them. That's interesting. Right now, I think one important note in the polling is that I think that people are picking between Pierre Poilievre and a generic Liberal. And it's easy for the Liberal Party. There's not yet a leader. Maybe it's Carney, but it's like an ideal Liberal versus a real and present Conservative.
I'm just going to contradict everything I've said so far, which seemed to suggest that Pierre's out in the wilderness now. And that is the mood that we'd be getting from the media, is like they turned on him. As soon as there was a plausible anti-Pierre narrative, we were flooded with anti-Pierre coverage as if like, that's it, he's done. But he has been campaigning against sort of like a dream bachelor version of a Liberal candidate, you know, and even to the extent that Poilievre is like, well, remember how much we all loved Harper and I was part of that. And then Carney says, well, Harper asked me to be finance minister.
Have you been offered positions in the past?
I have been offered positions in the past. I was offered, for example, Prime Minister Harper asked me if I would be his finance minister in 2012.
So he's trying to drink his milkshake there.
Ooh, it just has to sting.
It's not going to last, I think. And I think that the enthusiasm with which the media is embracing this idea that there's a path for the liberals and how quickly it went from like, oh, there's weakness in the conservatives' lead to like, he's done. There's no small amount of wishful thinking in this coverage to this question of, ooh, how can he thread this needle? How can he possibly be this patriotic Canadian who loves Canada after campaigning on Canada is broken, Canada is broken, on Canada and looking like a Trump? I don't think that's as big a challenge as people are making it out to be. I mean, Trump does it. Trump says, we're going to get out of this American carnage. He talks down America. He shits on America while hearkening back to a glorious past. That's kind of textbook populism. I'm not sure that's the contradiction. But the color problem, Danny, there is a problem. I'll grant you that because, you know, how can he be blue and hand red the color of the flag over to the opponents? You can't let Carney have red, but it's very confusing because, you know, the MAGA hats are red and Trump's tie is red. And
Republicans are red.
So now they're all red.
I think what you're missing there is that the Republicans are the party of like America, like the USA party versus the Democrats, who have often been accused of America bashing, whereas the Liberals are sort of like upper Canada, like, oh, look at us. Pierre Poilievre was, in fact, quoting Laurier at one point this weekend.
Yeah.
Who Justin Trudeau, back when he was everybody's liberal boyfriend, was quoting Sunny Ways.
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
Pierre Poilievre probably can't get away with sunny ways, but he's had to moderate his behavior. And that is just a change that we'll see.
After the break, we'll check in on how Pierre Poilievre is doing in Alberta. How is his narrative holding up there? And we'll talk about some new media from some old friends of the Candleland Network.
In Alberta, there's just not the same narrative. Like, people don't think Pierre Poilievre is done here. 80% of the vote goes to the Conservative Federal Party. It doesn't really matter. There could be a pumpkin with a conservative C carved into it, and we would vote for it.
Tell me more about this pumpkin.
You know, great policies against the carbon tax.
Yeah. I don't know. Who the hell cares what I say?
Mm-hmm. That's what I say.
If you want some indication, like, I think that Liberal MPs have pretty informed opinions about whether or not their chances have improved. And I don't know what the number, last time I checked, it was like 30 Liberal MPs not running again. I think it's a lot more than that now. And I just read that Pascal Saint-Onge, rising star cabinet member, not seeking re-election. So one thing you can speak about from Alberta, I'll allow it, is... the depth of the, I'm not even going to like use words like enmity or dissatisfaction, like the loathing of the federal Liberals. I do not think that a change in leadership is going, like, it's just been years of just disgust.
Yeah, I mean, ever since Trudeau Sr. and threats to nationalize right. the energy industry, certainly it's been years.
Well, as an Eastern currently freezing in the dark, no, I think nationwide we have seen a toxicity towards, I don't even like the way it's being pathologized. I mean, like, on its fringes, it's gotten uglier than we've seen in Canada. But a lot of that is just trying to, I think, dismiss the fact that the people are really unhappy with their government, you know, like really, really unhappy. Mm-hmm. And is the fact, and it is a fact, that many more journalists will lose their jobs if Pierre Poilievre is elected. Does that fact contribute to the love affair with Carney that I found in that like list of headlines that I only read half of? What do you think?
I mean, how can it not? Like, I think the CBC has certainly done an admirable job but trying to tackle what is a complicated situation. Perhaps it's not that different from Harper, who had similar feelings about the CBC. And we had to navigate that last time as well. But now we have the subsidies. Media's in even a worse situation than it was in 2014, 2015. And even the, you know, post-media chains, even they rely on those newspaper subsidies, mostly for bonuses for their senior level people. I think we in media are caught in a difficult situation, but then so is Pierre Poilievre. I mean, think of how he's made comments about Radio Canada and how that would stay even while they defund CBC, when Radio Canada and CBC, their funding is like so integrated, their organizations are so integrated. How can you fund one but not the other?
Well, because one still has influence to hurt him if they don't like him, and the other one is more effective for him as a punching bag. I don't think he cares anymore if he gets good coverage from CBC.
Oui, bien sûr, but it is still a reality that it's hard to separate those two. And I think Quebecers, they might like pandering, but they're not stupid.
That's right. And they just would hold him responsible for getting rid of Radio Canada because they still use it and value it.
And Francophone Albertans, thank you.
And Francophone Albertans, yes, because there's French speakers across this great nation of ours. Interestingly, Danny, an interview where he talked about his attitudes towards media was given to a new media source, Juno News. Who is Juno News?
Today, we're announcing that we're joining forces to change the media landscape in Canada.
We are announcing the launch of Juno News, junonews.com, a subscription-based service where you can find all of the content that you're looking for to stay informed on Canadian news and politics.
Follow along with everything Candace and I are doing as we grow this new company and try to change the face of journalism in Canada.
Please subscribe and help us build a better future.
Well, it looks like it's our old friend Kian Bexty.
Full disclosure, still suing me and Canada Land. Kian Bexty, originally Rebel Media, then he had his counter signal, which I guess is still around. But he's got a partner in this new Juno News enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Candace Malcolm.
It was interesting to see this joint venture because they already have little indie outlets. Candace Malcolm's True North Initiative, which looks like a news site of sorts, but is run out of a charity. Both True North and the counter signal read aesthetically as right-wing angry media, but Juno just looks kind of more pleasant and nice and banal, I guess, is the branding.
Yeah, it's green, but I mean, they say right in there about us that they are going to publish stories written by their friends at True North, so they're not really creating a lot of daylight between those two groups.
So are they just repackaging their stuff to make it look less angry?
Well, I don't even know if they're repackaging stuff. I mean, they're like right on their header. It's home, podcast, politics, immigration, crime, and counter signal. So I just don't think they're trying too hard to hide this.
All right. Well, information buyer beware. That's what Juno News is, as far as we can tell. So apparently Pierre Poilievre is a fan of Juno News. He gave them a 35-minute interview to help them with their launch. Here's what that sounded like.
The Parliamentary Press Gallery is like an insider's group. They don't want to give access to people who don't work for legacy media. What would your policy be around allowing access to your government or to you personally for independent media?
Absolutely. I think their independent media should be allowed on the precinct. There's no reason why it should be a small cabal of government-approved mouthpieces. It is highly undemocratic.
So, Danny, if Poilievre is so keen on independent media, why can't we get him on Canada Land? And just to run a fact check on Pierre here, you heard what he said about the Parliamentary Press Gallery. Canada Land is in the Parliamentary Press Gallery. Our reporter is Sam Connert. We are an independent news source. We do not take media subsidies from the government, but we are a part of the Parliamentary Press Gallery. So are we to be considered a part of the legacy media cabal? Anyways, new Pierre's take on the media is sounding suspiciously like old Pierre's take. Makes me think that he might need to workshop some new material. Here's what I read recently in The Hub. The new messaging from Pierre Poilievre works, but more material is needed, writes Scott Reed, who is the principal and co-founder of Festchuk Reed and former communications director for Paul Martin. It's pretty thin, this new Pierre. Like, what his Flag Day pivot has yielded, you know, it doesn't seem that different than old Pierre. If you were Jenny Byrne, Danny, and you were trying to help Pierre Poilievre be our next prime minister and regain his 28-point lead, what would you advise?
Were I a conservative political strategist, that's not a realm of thinking that I'm accustomed to, but I would say let's stay the course. I mean, I think that it was a necessary pivot to at least show some sort of solidarity, be like, you know, Canada's actually really great, because you can just say it's just Trudeau and the Liberals that need to go. We were fine before that. It was our glory days. Remember Stephen Harper? Remember what he said about Ukraine?
He had a tough message for the Russian president. Get out of Ukraine.
Like, great leadership. All we need is to get rid of the Liberals. And that still generally fits the mood. What they probably need to be careful of now is the general election and all of the mega retweets that their candidates are going to be, that they're going to cover in the media and uncover, like the interviews with Jordan Peterson, the like anti-woke Twitter accounts talking about God knows what, crime, immigration, etc.
Like how to trump it up with while keeping some space between him and Trump will be the challenge.
Canada first, Jesse. Canada first.
He's already given us some hints. And I think hearkening back, as you suggest, to the Harper years, there's already little hints of that. Because it was Stephen Harper who said that if he were still prime minister, he would accept, quote, any level of damage to preserve the independence of the country. I see that echoed in Poilievre's new speech.
We will bear any burden and pay any price to protect the sovereignty and independence of our country.
Which is an interesting thing to run on. Vote for me. We'll endure pain together. It's a little bit of like an S&M approach to political campaign.
Okay, like maybe for you softies in Upper Canada, but I think you have to consider that for people who listen to Jordan Peterson, think that people have become too weak. That's actually, it's a good message. The idea that we do need to fight and that there's endurance and that, you know, struggle builds character, which is all over like the manosphere, male dominated podcast, Joe Rogan. And so it actually aligns really nicely with a common idea. So if you think people are too weak, then you also think that people need to buck up. And I don't know, it appeals to me a little bit. I think we do need to buck up. We have taken for granted that we're just aligned with our best friends forever in the US. And then all of a sudden, it just takes one crazy guy to show us the problems with that and the need for some sort of sovereignty and identity separate from not being American.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that will play well against a bean counter opponent. He'll just keep associating him back with the Liberals, 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 but...
Yeah, like elite media banker doesn't exactly meet the mood of the moment, does it?
That is our show for today. Thank you, Danny, for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Jesse.
I can be emailed about what you heard at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. You'll also find me posting on Blue Sky. Come follow me there. Danny, where can people find you?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Danny Parody.
This episode is produced by James Nicholson, mixing and mastering by Caleb Thompson. Our director of audio is Max Collins, fact-checked by Sam Connard. I'm Jesse Brown, editor and publisher of Canada Land. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca.
Hey CFRC listeners, in celebration of International Women's Day, local icon Miss Emily and the Kingston Music Office are hosting an International Women's Day showcase on March 7th at the Broom Factory, with support from your friends here at CFRC. Experience a showcase celebrating the remarkable talents of women and non-binary artists in the Kingston community. Miss Emily will be hosting the night with feature performances from Clara Smallman, Julia Finnegan, Kyra Daniel, and Savannah Shea. Stay for the fireside chat exploring songwriting, creativity, and the challenges of navigating the music industry as underrepresented voices, as well as a showcase of women-led businesses in the Kingston community. It's sure to be the event of the season. Doors are at 7 p.m., and tickets can be found at ticketscene.ca.
Vibes? You know about vibes?
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
The mood.
With me.
Tune in every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. while I explore themes, atmospheres, or moods across genres and decades. Whether I'm scoring a scene or doing a genre deep dive, there'll be something for everyone.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
The mood was made on radio.
CFRC. The best radio station we've ever heard.
I'm stoked. You stoked?
I'm stoked.
Just
I'm
stoked. So stoked.
Team, we are so back. This is Stoke. If this is your first time listening, my name is Jane. I'm your host. And this is my cool little show that airs every Tuesday morning at 11 a.m.